Hello and welcome to Lush Tums, the podcast, supporting you on your mothering journey during pregnancy, birth and beyond. Through yoga, education and community, we enable every woman we work with to connect more deeply to herself and her own innate wisdom. Find your tribe as you become a parent, making positive, informed choices that are right for you, because Lush Tums believes everything has a place. Join the two Claires as we connect, laugh and learn. In this space, everything is welcome. Hi everyone, welcome to our second podcast. I'm Claire McGill. In this podcast, Claire and I interview our friend and collaborator Helen Moss. We dive into Helen's yoga journey and learn how experiences of giving birth and becoming a mother has influenced her work. She shares her passion for bringing a practice of rest into our daily lives and even gives us a few tips and techniques to try when we're facing a challenging moment. I particularly enjoy her suggestions of breath practices, or what we call pranayama in yoga. Simple suggestions we can all benefit from. So let's get stuck in. We are delighted to introduce yoga teacher Helen Moss. Claire and Helen both live in Brighton and have known each other for many years after meeting up over coffee. Having trained in multiple disciplines, including 500 hours training with the British Wheel of Yoga and 580 hours yoga therapy with the Minded Institute, she specialises in teaching restorative yoga and yoga nidra. If you've not heard of yoga nidra before, this is a guided and conscious relaxation practice that is intended to induce total physical, mental and emotional relaxation. It is typically done lying down, and through body and breath awareness and visualisation, you often find yourself drifting towards a place of sleep before being safely brought around and awoken. Helen has been part of our Lush Tums postnatal yoga teacher training for the last 5 years. She shares her knowledge and experience so we can bring elements of restorative yoga and nidra into our classes for new, often very tired mums. Over the last few years, she's developed a unique offering called Imagine Rest, where she blends these two disciplines together, taking the practitioner to a whole new level of relaxation. She is training other yoga teachers to be able to offer these unique classes to their students. In her words, rest is a radical act of self-care, and she wants us all to join the revolution. We're in. She lives in Brighton with her husband and two sons. So today we were going to ask you a little bit about your yoga journey, and in particular how being a yoga teacher has influenced motherhood, and maybe the other way around, how motherhood may have influenced your yoga journey also. So when did you first discover yoga?
At university. I was at Sussex. So yeah, I went along to the university gym, and there was this woman who was like three times my age, and I didn't know what was going on, and I laughed quite a lot and was a bit embarrassed and thought, what's all that about? And then after university, I found my local community centre and there was a teacher there. And I just found myself kind of going regularly. And that was the kind of beginning for me. And I was really interested. I couldn't sit very comfortably on the floor. I didn't really like a lot of the movement stuff, but I really liked what she was saying. It was definitely the mental aspect. It was like no one else in my life at that time was talking in that way and was bringing my attention to the things that she was talking about. I've always had an interest in philosophy.
So when did you decide that you wanted to train to become a teacher?
I'd been practicing yoga for probably about 7 or 8 years by then. And this in the same community hall, but a different teacher was running a foundations in yoga course. And so that was kind of already happening. And I was participating in that when I went on holiday with my boyfriend at the time. And I kind of had this panic attack in the airport, thinking about coming back to London and going back to this job. And I thought, oh, this is not right. This is just, not, I've got to make a change. And I didn't know at that point I wanted to become a yoga teacher. I just knew I didn't want to do that job anymore. And so I looked for, because we were cohabiting and we could kind of support each other, I looked for a part-time job and thought, well, I'll take a bit of time and work out what I want to do. And then the teacher who'd been doing the foundations course ran a teacher training. She said, why don't you think about coming along to that? And I thought, yeah, okay, I wanted something. I didn't think I wanted to be a yoga teacher, but I wanted something to learn. I wanted to learn more about it. So I thought, yeah, let's do that. So actually what happened was I made this transition within those 2 years of I got a part-time job. And after 2 years, I'd made the transition from moving to a part-time job to moving out of that and being a full-time yoga teacher.
That's so interesting. So do you think that your own experience of early motherhood maybe inspired you to lean into restorative and nidra and this radical act of rest that's so inspiring when you talk about it?
Yeah, I think it became a necessity, really. It was like I was quite broken after the birth of my first son. And I was really surprised by that because, like, you know, I'd done all the work, right? You know, I was this yoga teacher and I knew how to breathe and I trained in hypnobirthing and I ended up going into theatre. And I remember the doctor, he was such a nice doctor. I remember him saying to me at one point, I just need to know, is the noise you're making, is that pain or are you just making a noise? And I was like, no, I'm just making a noise, because I'd had an epidural by then, but they'd reduced it to a few hours beforehand before we'd gone into theatre in case we needed to, so I could have some sense of movement and pushing. And he said to me, he said, listen, you, this is the last chance. This is the last chance we're going to try here. And then we really have to take it to surgery. And I remember feeling this intense energy of, I don't know where it came from, determination or just will that this would be this vaginal birth. And the noise, like this really primordial noise that I made, that I've never made since. I've never heard myself make again. And then he came out, you know, and we managed it. Although the hypnobirthing really helped with how my afterbirth story, looking back, and I felt like I'd made some really informed choices throughout, and I felt okay with kind of physical element of how it had happened, I was physically really quite broken, and I went into shock that following week where I just uncontrollably shaking and really, really cold, and then I just kind of passed out. And I think my body, there was some trauma, you know, it felt quite violated and quite violent, the birth, even though I didn't feel upset about it. That was my experience of it in my body.
I think it's really important that, like you said, you've done the work, you've done the hypnobirthing, you were a yoga teacher, and yet your real lived experience perhaps doesn't reflect what society says that experience should look like. And I think that's really, really important.
I think, you know, as a yoga teacher that went on to then teach and support other women post birth, I was really glad of that experience, because then the birth of my second son was very different, still back to back, still reasonably long period of time, but progressed much more quickly, and there wasn't any intervention. And so I had these two very different experiences. And what that made me realise was I didn't have then any preconceived ideas of what birth should look like for anybody. I do think it's possible for women to have very comfortable births. And I do know women who've had that. But if I'm honest, the majority of women who I've worked with, that hasn't been that their experience, because they feel like there's this standard that they have to achieve, you know, and if they don't, they're falling short of this idea of, you know, what birth is. It was a deeply profound experience to birth another human being. And for me, it was a sacred event, really.
So with all of your amazing know-how about, you know, just restorative yoga and nidra and rest, you know, rest is something that could be really accessible for lots of mums, particularly if we can prioritise it. What kind of things might you
think would be helpful for postnatal women to help them with, you know, perhaps processing trauma, that kind of dissonance between thinking that you feel okay and then your body telling you something really different? Would there be some practices that, you know, we could speak about now that people might find helpful, or some signposting that might be useful?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of things, and a lot of that work needs to be tailored and individual depending on the person's experience, and you would need to be in contact with someone directly, whether it's a women's physio, if it's more a physical thing maybe, or if it's an emotional thing with a psychotherapist or a counsellor, or from a kind of, or just you want to be in group with other mothers, you know, just for that sense of community, whether it's baby yoga or something else. So there's always signposting to be done. If you feel, I would say to any young mother, if you feel that you're not coping, tell somebody. Just by telling somebody you trust, something good will come. The main thing was mindset shift. So there was this huge gap, if you will, between what they expected and then what happened. And for me, one of the best practices you could probably do now as a new mother, or as a mother going, having more children, is to make space for yourself on a daily basis, just to be with yourself. And what that looks like exactly might just be sitting for anything from 2 to 5 minutes. It could be, I mean, you know, yeah, my restorative, my favorite pose is always, particularly post-birth, I think as well, if it's comfortable after whatever's been attended to around the abdomen and how close you are to the birth, to bring the legs up onto something, whether you're lying on the couch and you put a couple of pillows under your legs, or whether you're lying on the floor and you put your legs up on the sofa, or whether you're lying on the floor and you put your legs up the wall, however you want to, just have your legs elevated, can be deeply soothing. But it could just be sitting in a chair and daydreaming a little and looking out the window. And it doesn't have to be this set precise time, but maybe that on a daily basis you just sit and make space to be with yourself, with no particular intention, but just to notice what you're thinking, how you're feeling. Because it's so easy to constantly, as you spoke to earlier, Claire, about, I keep having to call you by your surnames because obviously Claire Maddalena, but like this, you know, you're caught up in this life of this little person, and then you become consumed by their needs and their demands, and you lose sight, you're not embodied, because you're in your mind, unless you're breastfeeding, you know, you're in your mind attending, considering, planning, organizing what needs to happen for, you know, to stop for a moment, go, oh my God, actually, I, you know, just to see what thoughts come. This is, so that would be my first thing, just a little check-in. Do it in a restful position. Legs up can be so brilliant in many ways. The main thing I find is that it takes all the pressure off the spine. So if you're breastfeeding a lot, or you're just bottle feeding, however you're feeding, you're still forward folding probably most of the time. It takes a lot of pressure off. You can give up all the effort of the muscles of the neck and the shoulders as they're supported by the ground. So you can find a little bit of length through the spine, but you can also get that calming of the heart. And there's lots of other things that could be going on. I mean, a lot of it's lovely intelligent guessing, and a lot of it's suggested by science, but the main thing is, I think, calming for the nervous system. It brings a little relief to the neck and shoulders, and a little bit of length to the spine.
You make sort of taking, you know, 2 to 5 minutes out just to sit and be, maybe with the legs up. It just sounds like such a simple thing, but I know from like personal practice, it's actually, I find it so hard. You know, life and society is so busy. That actually there was a bit of a silver lining with some of the COVID timing, that there was a bit more time, there was a bit more breathing room to find those moments. But now life feels like it's speeding all back up again. I find personally, even though I'm a yoga teacher, it's really hard to carve out those moments to just be and to tune in and think, what am I feeling in this moment?
And that's the mindset piece as well, isn't it? Yeah, it's like it has to, and because you could do it sitting on a park bench or waiting for a coffee. I mean, you could do it anywhere, but you have to have an awareness of doing it. Do you know what I'm saying? You could, because you're so busy in your head, as you said, to even carve out the time and then to be able to attend, to give that what's required is concentration, that mental attention to just notice in that moment in yourself. it can feel like an extraordinary amount, even though it seems like the simplest thing. So, you know, whatever you do, do it with kindness, because, well, why not, for a start? I mean, why wouldn't we want to be kind to ourselves? That's a huge question. Why wouldn't we want to be gentle with ourselves and tender with ourselves in the way that we think about ourselves and in the way that we do go about our jobs, whether they're for ourselves or for our children? And if you don't manage it, doesn't matter. And if you manage it and you don't feel like it's become purposeful in any way, then maybe it's okay that's how it is. But it's just that you have, even in the most hardest of times, you've carved out the thought of yourself and how you're feeling and thinking in that time. And maybe that's enough. I mean, there are certainly lots of other things. Like, if you want to take, you know, just when the baby's sleeping, or if the baby sleeps on you, to put on your favorite piece of music, to put on a relaxation, to put on something that helps carry you into a state of shift in your system. And you can feel it, you know, you can feel it in the body when it drops. And that sense of giving up a little bit of being present, giving up a little bit of holding, whether it's light sleep or just a deep sense of rest in the body. And then you're kind of inviting this, you know, shift in the system, and it's the shift that brings the resilience. So the more that we shift between the two most known places of the nervous system, your sympathetic and parasympathetic, they're always interplaying all the time anyway, but the more that we shift consciously, the more resilient our system can be. So, you know, as you know, like as mothers, and you know, probably more in that showing up, attending to, doing phase than any other, or you're exhausted and collapsing and asleep.
I'm wondering what you would say to someone. I think, as Claire mentioned, the reality of trying to carve out that time sometimes feels difficult. And for that to happen, we have to choose to make it a priority, and we have to choose that it has value. Often people make choices because they benefit someone else, and it's very hard to make a choice that where you're saying, actually, this is for me. Which I think really chimes in with your idea that rest is a radical act of self-care. It's saying no, society, or no, all the millions of jobs I've got to do. This is taking priority for me right now. This is what matters. This is what I'm going to do or not do, I suppose, is the thing. How, if someone is very new to perhaps yoga, very new to the idea of finding wellness through sitting with themselves or finding stillness or finding rest, could you maybe outline some of the benefits? Why should someone do this? Why is it worth someone taking 2 or 5 minutes of their time to sit with themselves?
It's really important. There's no way for someone really to know until they do it and feel the benefit for themselves. And then, you know, the way around it, I found, and this is the mindset shift, you know, I've learned the hard way in my own practice. If I don't stop, I can't show up for my family. Full stop. Or even for myself. You know, if I just keep those times, I keep going and keep going and literally broken myself mentally and physically, I've been of no use to anybody. So it's kind of like, I made that promise to myself and that shift that I would pay better attention. And I would, and I do now. I'm really, you know, and people, I have these conversations. I've let go of the words guilt and luxury and treat. And I don't see my lying down in the middle of the day as anything to do with that. It's an absolute necessity for my energy at this age as a perimenopausal woman with 2 sons under 10, working and looking after a sick family. You know, that's just, I have to do that. And so I think, like with the pregnant women we talked about earlier and why they come to class, if you tell a parent, they won't do it for themselves, for their own benefit. Do it for your family. Do it for your baby.
I was wondering whether your training as a trauma-informed therapist, you might have suggestions, or what would you suggest for new mother or someone in their life who actually finds it very difficult to sit with themselves, to find that stillness, When they come to lie down or to relax, maybe they're having flashbacks, or maybe they their body just won't let them rest or relax because they're dealing with trauma. So, you know, we would always signpost and suggest that they go and get proper support they needed. But for that person who's on the waiting list or hasn't had their appointment yet or is still doing the work, what might you suggest that they do to find rest in a way that's going to be conducive for them?
Well, yeah, that's a big question, because obviously, you know, a lot of it depends on the severity. I mean, because maybe when we're talking about trauma in this context, I'm imagining we're talking more about, are you talking more about birth trauma? So a single event trauma. Yeah. Or maybe it's not a single event, could be several births, I don't know. Yeah, you know, it's hard to be able to prescribe something without actually having somebody in mind and what that might look like. You certainly, even when you come, and when I talk about stillness, I don't mean like not moving at all ever necessarily. Like I call it like a relative stillness. For some people, they might always need to tap their fingers or wiggle their toes, eyes open, eyes closed, doesn't matter. Yeah, it's not. I mean, for some people who don't have hypervigilance, then closing the eyes is easy peasy, and it changes the brainwaves almost instantaneously to alpha brainwaves, which is our kind of flow state brainwaves. Whereas for someone who's got hypervigilance, which is normally something that comes alongside a traumatic event, then that's going to be much more challenging for them. But you can use your senses in a way. This might be a practice to explore, is to be present to sensory information coming in. So touch. And this is a kind of psychotherapeutic tool that people use to help ground people in a moment of psychological discomfort, whether that's being, you know, of revisiting something that was deeply unpleasant. And yeah, just feeling into your environment in that moment. So just running your hands like on the clothes, on the carpet, on the floor, on the baby's blanket, you know, just becoming really aware of sound, really aware of colour and light. And you let your environment become your place of deep curiosity and interest, you know, and you can be fully present without engaging in conversation, without engaging in things that are coming. So you're not pushing anything away, you're not trying to quiet now or get rid of thoughts or, you know, all that stuff that's really scary. And, you know, for people who don't even have deep discomfort in their psychology, but you're just inviting it to be present to it, and you can take your attention within that space wherever you want, whenever you want, right? In the same way that you can imagine what you like or and change it if you don't like what you're imagining. But yeah, I mean, I think the ideal for people would be to have some way of shifting the opinion of their nervous system and of their brain and of their body in relationship to that event. And that needs tailored support. Yeah. Whether it's group, whether it's individual. So it's not really, it would never be really a one size fits all. But I think if you're asking about how someone could maybe take a pause in their day that felt quite challenging, that maybe is already having sleep difficulties or emotional overwhelm quite readily, you can keep moving, but just being present to your environment through your senses may just give you a way of finding present moment unfolding, break from rumination, break from that remembering or imagining, and just being in that moment with all of that stuff that's around you and taking hopefully support from that.
Do you ever use pranayama practices to support people with those kind of issues?
Yeah, what a brilliant question. I do. I've had pranayama practice all my life because I breathe all the time. But, you know, I think we forget that. We sometimes think pranayama has to be this very whatever. I mean, the only pranayama practice now that I would really recommend to anyone is 6-6 breathing. I think if you're going to do anything, do that. And if you're not sure what that is, you can really easily check it out online. Look at coherent breathing. There is a very complicated, well, I find it very complicated website called Coherence, which has got lots of sciencey stuff on it if you want to check that out. Otherwise, there's a lovely book by Dr. Peter Brown and Patricia Gerberg about it as well, which is an easy read. But there's lots of free stuff online you can find out. It's literally just breathing in for 6 seconds and breathing out for 6 seconds. There's free apps that you can get that have it. I like one called the Breathing App. It's a sound, has a little visual on it. And what that breath just basically does is set your nervous system into this place of resonance. So there's a, and I'm not sure if I've explained that in a useful way, but so it synchronizes your brain rhythm, your heart rate, and your breath rate. And why that's useful is because the body loves resonance. It loves synchronicity of system. And those things bring us closer to our homeostatic, our homeostasis rather, which is our place of optimum balance. And from optimum balance comes optimum functioning. So if you're going to do any kind of breath that's going to be the most useful for you probably ever in any situation, unless you have a serious lung condition like COPD or TB or something, would be 6-6 breathing. And a lot of people say, well, I can't breathe in for 6, it's too long. You can use, if you lie on the ground or even if you sit and you lift your arm up with the sound, because there's a sound to the breath that counts you in, you know, and counts you out. That's usually enough, just lifting the hand through the 6 seconds and lowering the hand through the 6 seconds to help even out the breath. But if not, my recommendation, others would disagree, would be just take an even count, as close to 6 as you can, practice enough, and you'll get there.
Fantastic. So simple, but with so many benefits. Inhale for 6, exhale for 6. You could do that with a child. You could do that with anyone. And that's something maybe someone, even in a moment, even standing around, maybe they've not carved out that time, but perhaps they could just take one moment there to tune into their breath with that count and maybe instantly start to feel some of the benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about kind of overwhelm in the moment, like whether it's on any level, you know, kind of like you're feeling your heart pick up, like maybe, but you might not even be tuned into the sensation of it. So it might be that your heart's going faster, your words are coming out faster, you've got a high pitch in your voice, that you're having this conversation with someone and you can feel all those emotions around irritation, upset, distress, whatever it might be. Feeling the ground can be really useful. That first thing we talked about, scrunching your toes and your feet, rocking from backwards and forwards into your feet, side to side, getting grounded. You could imagine breathing from the ground up to the crown of the head and then back down. And in those moments as well, having a slightly longer exhale, just for a few breaths, not consistently, I don't think consistently it's that useful, but just for like 3 to 5 breaths might just help. Because what that breath out does when you breathe out for longer, you put a little break, literally send like little transmitters down to the heart to put a little break on the heart rate. So you just slow it down a little bit. And that's what will help just bring the system down a little bit, help us begin to feel a little bit calmer, a little bit more connected. So feeling the ground, scrunching the toes, maybe even feeling into your environment, hands on whatever's around you. Imagine breathing from the feet up to the head and the head back down to the feet with a slightly longer breath out, like a little micro practice, like a little anywhere from 30 seconds to 3 minutes, you know, can be done in the supermarket. And also you can do it retrospectively. So, you know, if you forget to do it or you come away feeling really harangued from something and it's still with you, you know, you can do it later. You can come back to it. You can bring that picture, if you want, into your mind or some semblance of memory of what it was and then do that action.
And just breathe it through. It's such a powerful thing. And also, you know, that thing is, you know, the breath is always accessible to us. We have it all the time. You don't need a special tool or the yoga mat or be in a particular space or environment. The breath is with us all the time. So it's accessible, isn't it? And the other thing that I was really thinking when you were speaking about that, you know, when we're really lost in rumination or thought or panic or all those big feelings, when they're suddenly bubbling up and out in an almost uncontrollable way, bringing our attention back to that breath is kind of almost kind of unhooking our thought processes from that which is taking control, and it's unhooking us from that powerful, all-encompassing, can't quite get my words out, but when we feel swept up in something, we can, by concentrating on the breath, we're like detaching from that for a moment and creating a buffer and a break to give ourselves that time to reset, but also psychologically give the brain a chance to just think about something else. One of the questions that we want to ask on our Lush Terms podcast about, we kind of have this idea that our children come through with some sort of gift for us, and that might be something that we learn about ourselves as part of the birthing process, or it might be something that we clock later on when we're parenting. And but what kind of gift or learning do you think your children brought to you that you could thank them for and share with everyone?
Oh, that's a good question. There are lots, but I think maybe the biggest one, is something around the beauty of imperfection. Like, I mean, I'm a Virgo, I'm a perfectionist, I've got OCD, you know, I'm a real neat freak, you know, that's my boxes for everything, boxes for boxes for boxes, everything in the right place, you know. And I think my children, whether it came down to personality, whether it came down to how the house looked, whether it came down to, you know, how I had the best of intentions for our day and we were going to do this and we were going to do this and it was going to be this, and it all ended up being something that was a complete mess. Like, and it wasn't always an easy lesson, you know, but there was a lot of upset, there was a lot of discomfort in that for me. And it's not like it's done now and I've moved on and I've achieved it. It's an ongoing thing. But I think that, yeah, just finding the beauty and celebrating the imperfection, because it doesn't need to be perfect. Nothing is anyway. Ever. And if it was, no one would know, because we'd all still be trying to find perfect, even though it was perfect. It's like, it's never going to be good enough, so why bother keep chasing? This idea doesn't exist. So I think that's probably it.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
The other question we like to ask our guests is offer the statement, I'm a yoga teacher, but, and this is our chance to dispel any maybe myths or images around what it looks like or what you should be as a yoga teacher, and to share something that's just real about us.
Oh, do you want me to say it? Yeah. So I'm a yoga teacher, but this is quite a big one, but at the moment it's really true for me. I'm a yoga teacher, but I don't like a lot of yoga.
Oh, controversial.
I don't even really call myself on my website, you'll struggle to find the word yoga on my website currently.
So, Claire, what's your I'm a yoga teacher but?
Definitely not anywhere near as profound as Helen's. It's I'm a yoga teacher, but I've just ordered a massive case of wine and I can't wait for it to come. Some more that I want to have soon. Pick some really nice white and some really nice rosé and some bubbles, and I'm going to really look forward to getting a bit smashed at some point this summer.
I'm a yoga teacher, but I like getting a bit smashed.
It's all about balance. Yeah. I actually really enjoyed my last hangover because it was such a long time from the one before. It was like, oh, this is what a hangover's like, and I get to rest under a blanket for the day. Woohoo!
Oh, amazing. That's another podcast, restorative yoga for when you have a hangover.
What about you, Claire? What's yours this time?
Another food/drink related one. I'm going to start thinking of other things in my life where I'm not a very good yoga teacher. But I'm a yoga teacher, but I much prefer Yorkshire tea, really milky with two sugars in, to any herbal concoction. Bring on the Yorkshire every time. I do like herbal tea, but you know, it's when I'm feeling particularly saintly. It's not my go-to cuppa. My go-to cuppa is definitely nursery tea, I think my colleagues at work used to call it. But,
We'll have to write to Yorkshire Tea and ask them to write some little special messages on each tea bag, like, start your day with compassion. Just to fill my yoga gap. Give yourself a hug.
I'd like to ask is, what are you grateful for in your life right now?
Oh God, so many things. So many things. Gratitude, really, daily work, like just noticing. Pandemic really highlighted so much of that. I'm very grateful currently for my driveway that Claire's husband did, that we finally had done after living with what looked like a bomb site for about 3 years in the front garden. That's transformed, looking out onto a nice little bit of lawn and dry. That's really grateful for that. But grateful for security, that's the biggest one. Really appreciating being able to have money to pay for the bills. Yeah, really grateful for that. Because last year it wasn't like that, and that was quite a different place. Every day, grateful for that and what that brings. And then in the acknowledgement of when you don't have that. Grateful for the security, enormously grateful for that. And the driveway, obviously.
Yeah. How about you, Claire? What are you grateful for this week?
Oh, I'm grateful for my new book that's arrived. It is called The Witch's Herbal Apothecary, Rituals and Recipes for a Year of Earth Magic and Sacred Medicine Making. It's by a lovely lady. I'm definitely going to pronounce her name wrong, so I apologise in advance. Maricia Menonoska. Sorry, I'm terrible at pronouncing things that I haven't heard. But I heard her on a brilliant podcast this week talking all about her book, and I'm going to kind of start getting a little bit, I'm going to get some herbal teas.
Send some to Claire, she can't wait. Love it.
Special
happy
batch.
Birthday, here's a box of homemade herbal tea.
In the cupboard they shall remain. Yeah. I'm grateful for quite a few things this week, but the one that's just popped into my head right now is my kids being back in school and the space that gives me in my life to be me and to do the things that I want to do. Some of the time, a lot of the time I'm still doing things that are for other people, but I am so grateful that they get to go somewhere where they are nurtured and they have fun all day, and then they get to come home and share what they've done with me, and I get to share what I've done with them, and we appreciate our time together so much more just by having that space. So yeah, grateful for school. Nerd
out.
So I think that is all our questions now. Helen, is there anything that you would like people to know that you've not had a chance to say yet?
Offering your online subscription for people if they want to practice with you?
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, I am. So that's kind of a new thing. So I've been offering a month of practice, and it last 2 months I've offered a week for free, so it's £29.50. But usually it's £38, and it gives you that in May. So I've done it, each month's been slightly different. So you just sign up for 1 month. And then if I get in a place where I want to do it as a rolling thing, then I will. And you get you definitely get 3.25 hours worth of practice a week for that. So it's £38, it's £9.50 a week for 3.25 hours worth of practice. And you get all the half an hour, four classes at half an hour, one at 45 minutes, and they're live. And then they're also recorded, so you can go on and watch them whenever you want, as many times as you like afterwards with whoever's in your household. And you get a free gift every month, which might be a Q&A session, might be an extra practice, might be a one-to-one. And then you can also, so if you want to buy any class with me within that subscription offering, you can also just pay £12 for a week and just do a week, once or twice a month, whenever you want. And so I'm just trying to simplify everything, because I was offering lots of different stuff and I just thought, oh, it's just, I'm really liking the subscription. I'm really enjoying it. People are enjoying it. So if that's something you're interested in, yeah. There's one obviously starting tomorrow for May. And then what comes after May? June. Then it'll look slightly different, June and July. Yeah. So just stay close. Just stay stay in contact by email. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we'll include your website and all your details with the show notes so people can find you.
Well, I'm going to do a little shameless plug for Helen and myself. We're going to be getting together and putting something out there probably in July to help support postnatal women, mums. Doesn't matter when you had your baby, it could be a long time ago or quite recently in this COVID period, but we're going to be putting out a little workshop or a mini course offering some of the things that we think might be helpful, so keep a little eye out for that.
Thank you so much, Helen, for joining us today. It has been such a pleasure speaking to you, and really enjoyed hearing all you've had to say, and we're looking forward to catching up with you again soon.
Very pleased and honoured to be on your show, and I love the fact that you're doing this and bringing these conversations out to mums that we know and mums that we don't, and maybe even some non-mums would be nice too, wouldn't it? Spread the word.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyone else thinking of Mars bars?
No, I wasn't. And it took me about 30 seconds after you said that to just go, oh, what? Listen, play. Oh, yeah. I forgot that.
As a child of an 80s here, it's all I hear is rest and play.
Oh, my God. That's the power of marketing. Blimey. I remember.
To be fair, it doesn't take a lot for me to think about chocolate. So it's never far from my mind. That and cake. Constant space.